Views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, today coming to you from the studios at WILL AM 580 here in Urbana, Illinois. We've got a show today I think you're going to enjoy. It deals with local radio in the Champaign-Urbana area, the East Central Illinois region, commercial, community, and public. And we have two terrific guests to talk about it. Joining us both in the studio today, Kimberly Kronick, Outreach Coordinator and Producer of Special Broadcasted Events at WILL TV and Radio. Kimberly Kronick also is the on the programming committee at the community radio station, WEFT, in Urbana-Champaign. And she is also one of the founders of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. So she's really sort of a maven of local media, a nonprofit, non-commercial media. It's a pleasure to have you here today, Kimberly.
Thank you. It's good to be on the show. I listen as often as I can. It's great to have this program.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say. Also joining us in the studio today is Dr. William Patterson, visiting assistant professor in the Afro-American Studies Department at the University of Illinois. He created the BEATS, the BEATS program, which stands for Bridging Education, Arts, and Technology Scholastically. The program empowers at-risk youth to explore and make media images and the implications of those images on popular culture. He also created All Girls Radio, a show engineered and produced by African-American girls in middle school. Franklin Middle School, is that right?
No, actually, All Girls Radio is actually a community-wide based program.
Oh, okay. So middle schools in general.
Middle and high school.
And high school, too. Mm-hmm. The program airs weekly on WBCP Radio, Central Illinois' only black-owned and operated radio station. Dr. Patterson has a PhD in Educational Policy Studies from the University of Illinois and Master's in Curriculum Instruction and is a graduate of Loyola University in New Orleans.
Sure. No, actually, no. A graduate of Columbia College, Chicago.
In Chicago. But
with a radio broadcast, but attended Loyola University.
So it's a pleasure to have the voice you've already heard, listeners, Dr.
Yes.
William Patterson, in the studio with us today. Now, I should add for our listeners who are used to calling in with questions before you get to the phone lines, we're taping the show a couple days before we went on air, so don't call in today. Let the professional yakkers do the talking today. Make yourself a cup of tea or whatever you enjoy. Sit back and relax, and I hope you have a good show. Kimberly, let's start with you. You know, I think for a lot of people who listen to radio, mm-hmm. you know, you're sort of, you've got all these commercial stations, and then you've got what's called a public station, but we are, WILL, AM 580, and then you've also got a community station, which is on the FM band here, WEFT, and you're connected to both of these. Why don't you, you know, briefly walk us through, if you would, you know, what's the what is the difference between, why do you have a community and a public station? Why can't you just have one station that doesn't have ads on it in a community?
Right. Well, I think I'm fortunate that my paid work is with public radio, and I'm also allowed to volunteer at WEFT. There is sort of a collaborative effort. WEFT does things that WILL doesn't do, and WILL, with many more resources, does things WEFT can't do. So it's real important that people know that we have a very unique situation here in Champaign-Urbana, having both a community and a public radio station. One of the big differences, I think, is that community radio involves a lot more diversity of voices and different levels of skill. And the whole idea behind community radio is that pretty much anyone who wants to go through the training class at WEFT can become what we call an air shifter, as opposed to a DJ or an on-air mm-hmm. host, and can become involved in something that is totally run by volunteers except for the station manager and the underwriter coordinator. So imagine that. Imagine volunteers running a radio station. That's been the case for more than 22 years at WEFT.
Now, what is the, what's the, for people who haven't listened to WFT, and we've got a lot of listeners who listen to the show, some on the web, but all over the region, and a lot of them, or some of them, I suspect, haven't really tuned in WFT. What would you get if you tuned in there? How does it sound different from WILL?
Well, there is some formatting that makes some consistent programming during the week. What's different is it's always locally hosted, and there's much more music, and there's public affairs that's from more of a left perspective, you could say, than National Public Radio. In the mornings during the week, we have strip programming, we call it, which is consistent programming from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 6 to 9 a.m. is the morning menu program, which is mixed news and information, music from all different genres. Then we have 2.5 hours of jazz, 2.5 hours of blues, 2.5 hours of world music. Then we have 2 hours of public affairs.
And what time is the public affairs?
That's from 4 to 6 p.m.
Every day?
Monday through Friday, 4
and
o'clock.
What's on the public? Since this is, we've got a public affairs junkie audience on this show.
Right.
People, what are they going to hear?
Right. 4 to 5 every day is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and
Who
Juan Gonzalez.
Who has been a guest on Media Matters and will be a guest again, an old friend of the show.
Trying to bring her here, actually, to Champaign-Urbana someday soon. Then we have half hour on Mondays of the Independent Media Center's radio news, produced locally by volunteers right at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Then we have Free Speech Radio News, which is reporters who used to be with Pacifica Network before that meltdown a few years ago, who now have reorganized and provide news from around the world, which WEFT carries. And then there's a different public affairs program, some of which WILL also carries, such as Counterspin, Latino USA, but WEFT carries the Making Contact, which WILL does not. Mm-hmm. So there's some complementary things and some very different things on the different stations.
Now, William Patterson, turning to you, you've have a lot of experience in radio. I mean, we were talking before the show, you've worked on a lot of different stations. What's your sense of the quality of Champaign-Urbana commercial broadcasting right now, as you look at the dial? What are its strengths? What are its weaknesses?
Well, I think that you have, I guess, on a local level, there's very limited formatting.
I got to tell you the truth, William, if you don't know, you don't know how much you listen to the show. In this show, the strengths of commercial broadcasting, you haven't gotten a lot of time. You're on the same page.
Excellent. The formatting is very similar across the board, despite the genre. You know, when you have mainstream media or corporate radio, you get the same thing. And so everything sounds the same. There's no personality in it. You know, I often say there's no soul in radio anymore. I like listening to stations like Oldies 92. I think you still get some spirit of the jock in the music. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a jock person. I really like the personality to accompany the format. And so when you don't have that, and you have more music or whatever, you know, I have my CDs to listen to to now format my own music. I want to hear personality and want to interact with people.
You've been involved with the local radio scene.
Sure.
I mean, you're a native of the area.
Sure.
You've been involved for 20-some years.
Yeah.
You were talking about for the show.
Yeah.
Have you noticed changes in the radio, the commercial radio dial and scene over the last 20 years? Or has it gotten better or worse? What have you seen?
Was nice when WBCP did come on the air. It was nice to have a
for
station.
For listeners who aren't familiar with WBCP, tell a little background.
WBCP is an African-American owned radio station that was started in, I want to say 1984, 85, maybe a little earlier by, J.W. Pirtle, Lonnie Clark, and at that time, who's now deceased, Vern Barkstall, used to run the Urban League. And they started that radio station. It was a very important time because before that, the only time you would get any type of R&B oriented radio or soul radio was on Sunday nights with WLRW. And Ernie Westfield hosted a show there. Kim Love did a show on WPGU. And then there's been different jocks along that have filled those formats or at least those time slots over a period of time. But when WBCP came on, it was a station that was specific to the soul format. Mm-hmm. And you had people that locally, they got opportunity to become broadcasters. And so much kind of like WFT, you now have a lot of, even though it's a professional broadcast station, there's still a lot of local folks that actually run the station and do a lot of the work. And so it provides people an opportunity to learn about radio and to broadcast in a quote unquote soul environment. And a very prominent DJ who's very corporate, but he does a lot of, I call his show Social Service Radio, and that's Tom Joyner. He does a show, a morning show where he raises money for Negro colleges and does a tremendous work through just the antics of in the spirit of the black community. And he had wrote an article when I was in college, and I remember he talked about the demise of soul radio. He said, now there's urban radio and there's churban radio. He said, but you have to be careful that soul radio doesn't get lost, because that's when you start losing the essence of a community. And so his show is very much a soul radio show. mm-hmm. you know, and so I really enjoy listening to him because it's the spirit of the, again, the spirit of the jocks
yeah.
that make the show. And then that give, have people give to the fund that makes it social change. And mm-hmm. so that's very important.
My name is Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters Today here on WILL AM 580. We have in the studio joining us Dr. William Patterson, who you just heard, a visiting assistant professor in the Afro-American Studies Department here at the U of I, who's also working on some very inventive work on radio that we're going to be talking about during the show. Along with us also, Kimberly Cronick, who is the outreach coordinator here at WILL TV and radio, as well as working with WEFT and the local Independent Media Center. I think someone well known to many of the listeners to Media Matters for her activism in the community. Kimberly, one of the issues that has affected radio, commercial radio in this country, we've talked a lot about on Media Matters, and I think that Will was just mentioning, has been with the sort of commercialization of radio, of commercial radio, has gotten concentrated into fewer owners. A lot of the local community needs have fallen by the wayside that once were handled by commercial radio. And in a way, this has almost been a blessing in disguise for your employer, for WILL, because public radio around the country, the NPR affiliates, have actually doing fairly well but in terms of ratings and following because the commercialism of the rest of the dial is pushing people, many people, towards the NPR stations. Yet at the same time, NPR stations come under a lot of criticism, especially for their news from people who would work at WEFT, at the Independent Media Center, for really providing conventional mainstream news. You hear a lot of this criticism. What's your sense of it?
Well, the problem is, even though we may be getting better response to what we do in terms of fundraising and more listeners because there are fewer choices on the dial, when there are fewer voices, we sound more like we're from Neptune mm-hmm. or Mars. And it's not by coincidence that I mentioned that because WEFT has a show, News from Neptune, mm-hmm. Saturdays from 10 to 11, that discusses things, current events in a different perspective that aren't mentioned. So on the one hand, you know, it's great for us, but we actually need more voices. We could stand to have a community and a public radio station in the town. The two complement each other. They fill gaps that the other doesn't fill. And why not have more voices? So I'm actually nervous that there are fewer choices because there's more ownership of the media, more commercialization, more let's make a buck, people are expendable, let's program from another state just to get the highest ratings. That's scary to me.
Now, where does the Independent Media Center, that you were one of the founders of here in town, or one of the founders?
Founding funders. I do want to correct
funders.
That.
Okay, yeah. Like founding funders. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where does that fit into the picture? What is the, you know, I think a lot of our listeners have heard this term perhaps, but they don't know much about it. What is an independent media center? How is that, you know, what does that mean? And how does that relate to WEFT? You said they do a show on WEFT.
Right. Well, it's fortunate again that we have all three of these organizations in our town. Independent media is an age-old term, but it sort of got rekindled during the 99 protests in Seattle against the World Trade Organization. The coverage of those demonstrations in mass media was very much out of line with what actually happened. And so people need to take control of the media to get authentic representations of what's going on. And that's the whole idea, everything from what Will was saying about presenting yourselves in an accurate picture. And so the independent media takes volunteers. These are non-professionals. These are people that don't have backgrounds in media, and they train them using mini disc recorders, camcorders, and using websites. And what happens is there's a website where you can publish any news you want. And there are reporters from the News Gazette and there are police officers from the departments that go to that and they see what people are saying about them. So it forces, I think, a relationship between the media, because there's a watchdog function that occurs with independent media, and people pay attention to that. I know personally that News Gazette reporters read what's posted there.
What's the website address for listeners who want to check it out?
UCIMC.org.
Okay.
And the half-hour IMC radio news, fortunately, is able to be broadcast on WEF. So not only is there a website presence where anyone can go and publish an article, there's also that radio program that is aired weekly on WEFT. So there is an outlet for that. There's also Urbana Public Television. People can make videos that air on that as well. So there are many.
And this is the public access channel.
Yes.
If you have cable.
Mm-hmm, if you have cable.
It. What channel is it?
Oh, I believe it's channel 5.
I think you're right, too.
And I think 6 is the Champaign one, yeah.
Okay. Which one's better?
Well, you know what? I have to say Urbana is.
Because you're from Urbana.
Well, I'm not actually.
What are you doing, William?
He's from Urbana.
I'm from Urbana.
Oh, okay. God, I am too. God, we've got the deck stacked in here.
Well, the thing is that because there's a public access component still of the Urbana public television or public access, and that's real important. So what happens is what I like to do is I try to be a bridge between independent media, community radio, public TV, and broadcasting because I want to help people understand the three different kinds and to challenge each other to be more accessible, to be more engaged with the community so that we can serve democracy better. And the more voices, the better. Mm-hmm. And so we're fortunate, but there's this coordination and misunderstanding of each other. But fortunately, mostly I see it as cooperative, mm-hmm. and I am happy to try to be that bridge.
Great. This is Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580. Again, this show was taped a couple days before we went on air, so please do not try to call in. Just sit back and relax and let us do the talking. My guest today, Kimberly Cronick, who you just heard, the outreach coordinator here at WILL Radio and Television. She also works at WEFT, our local community station. And what's the frequency for WEFT?
90.1 FM.
90.1 FM, and she's one of the founding funders of the Independent Media Center of Urbana-Champaign, which you just spoke about. William Patterson, visiting assistant professor of African American Studies here at the University of Illinois, longtime veteran in radio, and working now on, I think, a really interesting project with Kimberly that I'd like to talk about, with some girls, local girls in the community, to put together their own radio show that will be aired right here on WILL in May. Tell us a little bit about it, if you would, William, and a little bit of the background and what you're working on.
Okay. I guess, Kim, we started talking about coming together through, I think, a variety of community issues. We were discussing how, I think at that time, how WILL or could get involved from a broadcast perspective, whether it was TV or radio, and doing some research on local community issues. And I think we first started with like history of Douglas Park and wanted to do a piece on that. And then at that time, we started finding out about the Brown activities that the university and the 50-year commemorative activities were going on campus. And
let's back up because this is very important. I mean, everyone connected to the university, I think, is familiar with us. We have a lot of listeners who aren't. Okay. Mm-hmm. What do we mean when we talk about the Brown activities? And what is that talking about?
Well, it's the 50th year anniversary of the Brown versus the Board of Education decision to desegregate the public schools in the United States. And so within that, I think universities and communities across the country are doing activities to take a look and revisit the decision and the implications that it's had on communities across the country. And so locally, I think that's where we decided that it would be, I guess, the thing to do was to focus on a project that looked at those issues locally on how that decision impacted the public school situation here locally, given what's going on with the public schools.
So that was the motivation for the broad project. I mean, that was the broad motivation for the project you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right. The idea is to take African-American girls in middle school, to empower them by giving them the tools to do research, to understand history, to link history with what's going on now. Because when you think about it, 1954... that was 104 years of struggles that African Americans engaged in the courts before segregation was legally overturned. But there was never legal segregation in Illinois. However, there was de facto, but by circumstance, there were segregated public schools. In fact, the public schools here were not desegregated until 1966, which is 12 years after Brown v. Board. So the students are learning how to make the connections between what happened nationwide with what happened in the local school district with what's happening now, and using radio, the tools of radio, to get that story, to contribute that history, which will be archived in the local library and will be accessible to listeners on our website.
So you just went out to middle school and just started talking to some kids to see who was interested? How did that go? How do you do that way?
Well, with the All Girls Radio program that I've produced for Provena Covenant Medical Center for a number of years, I try, as Kim is learning now, I try to find ways to bridge programs and ideas with different corporations and organizations. And my background is really focusing on collaborative relationships and looking at how to fuse policies and different things like that. And so I knew that at Franklin School, Sandy Powell, the principal there, was looking at some ways to change the culture of learning with it at Franklin Middle School, and that there were some difficult issues that they were having, I guess, last year. And she had called me and wanted me to come over and see what we could do from a student culture perspective. I'm like, well, you know, I want to bring All Girls Radio over to your school. I think it'd be a great tool to have, you know, a great program to have over at the school. And I said, but at the same time, there's a project going on over at WILL, and maybe we could figure out how to get girls at Franklin involved in a research project as it relates to broadcast and research, to make the link of what's happening or to address the issues of the culture of learning at the school. And that if we demonstrate girls working on a media project, something that looks fun, something that maybe look cool, that then that other students may want to emulate the behaviors of learning about their history by being diligent about research and really beginning to appreciate why it's important to excel and what the Brown, and so we do that through Brown. Mm-hmm. And so understanding what that struggle was about and why it's so important to take care of the legacy of that.
I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters today on WILL AM 580. My guest, William Patterson, who you just heard, Kimberly Cronick, who you are about to hear. Let me take this opportunity, if I can, to tell you that 1 week from today on Media Matters, our guest will be New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, who's graciously agreed to join us. 2 weeks from today, and another economist, we have two economists in a row, Robert Pollan from the University of Massachusetts, with his new, talking about his new book on recent economics in the United States. And 3 weeks from today, 4 weeks from today, excuse me, Al Franken, the comedian and author, and soon to be joining us in the radio wars. You just announced Al Franken is going to be going face-to-face with Rush Limbaugh, doing a daily talk show, as he promises, drug-free radio. So that's going to be starting up pretty soon. So Al Franken will be with us to talk about that process in 4 weeks. I hope you'll all join us. But today we're talking here on Media Matters about local issues, about All Girls Radio, and about a documentary being put together by some middle school girls here in Champaign concerning desegregation in the schools here, the historical legacy, what's going on in the community today, issues that I think it's fair to say are almost never covered in the commercial news media or commercial media. Rarely, I regret to say, in the public and community media, but it's going to happen on WILL. We're going to have a big documentary 2 days in May. Is that right, Kimberly?
Right. Right now, it's scheduled to be broadcast, debut broadcast, May 15th. That's a Saturday at 5 p.m.
And then a one-hour program?
One-hour program, repeated on Monday, May 17th, the exact 50th anniversary, at 6 p.m. on WIL.
You know, listeners, don't worry if you don't have a pen handy. We'll be sure to remind you as the moment draws nearer. So is there research that's involved in this, Kimberly? I mean, if the kids, the girls, I shouldn't call them kids, the girls, are they in the library? How are they going about researching this?
Yeah, they're about to do that. There's a couple ways. Well, first, I want to make sure I impress upon the audience, we're talking about 12 and 13-year-old girls.
Middle school, not high
school. Middle school, no. We're talking about, we're teaching them. They are doing everything. We're guiding them. But we taught them how to use the audio equipment, and then they taught each other. That's the way we teach them. Mm-hmm. We had Professor Barnett come and talk to them about the Brown decision in the court, so they learned that way. They saw a video. They had discussion. Next week, they're going to the Urbana Free Library to look at old newspaper articles from the News Gazette and Courier about how the desegregation issue was covered. They're going to be reading oral histories that have already been done on some African Americans who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s in this town. They're going to look at some of the reports on desegregation prior to the move to desegregate. So we're having to teach them this in ways that hopefully help connect them to their experience. So how do you do that? We're just starting to see that. What we do is we take their interview that they do. We did this last week, and we sit in a group, and they listen to the interview, and they start to categorize what they're hearing. And then it took us an hour and 15 minutes just to get through 6 minutes. It was our first time, so we're going to speed that up a bit. Mm-hmm. But they start to connect with the material. For example, one of our subjects said, you know, I lived in Chicago with my kids, and they went to all black schools and had all black teachers, and I needed to get them out of there to come here. And one of the girls said, well, was this woman white who was saying this? And no, she wasn't. Well, they didn't understand why they would want to, they didn't understand, it sounded bad to them. And the question was, well, what was she thinking? Why did she say that? And so, because this notion of separate schools, some schools that are separate are because you, that's how you get empowerment. That's how you get better performance. Integrated schools, there's problems in there. And so they're grappling with these higher mm-hmm. analytical issues and connecting to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, William, I mean, there is a, you're a native of Champaign mm-hmm. and went to high school here, the works. I mean, this, the city has a thriving, long-standing African-American community. How well do these kids know the history of their own community from your experience?
Well, I can tell you that it's not thriving.
Well, so we're thriving in one sense.
In one sense.
That it exists.
And I have to put that out there because I think at one point it maybe it was.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that people are starting to look at that issue in terms of really what were the implications of desegregating schools and just, you know, integration period. And did it help or harm the black community, the black, a business owner, the educator, community, you know, neighborhood, so on and so forth. Because for, you know, as Kimberly just suggested, we had, you know, one of our subjects that believed that she needed to remove herself from the black community or from a black school in order to get a better quality of education. Mm-hmm. And we're finding out within integrated schools that black kids are still doing poorly, you know.
Yeah, in fact, what you were saying before the show, Kimberly, if I recall, was that, I mean, it's almost really quite striking that in the segregated schools, there was much more of a commitment to education among the students than you're finding today. Is that a fair way to summarize your comment?
Well, one of the things the students found out, and by the way, I should tell listeners, if the kids, if we could have got the kids out of school, they could have represented themselves here today.
Yeah, but we're not trying to be adultists.
Right, we're just for them. I just want to let folks know.
Yeah.
And there'll be opportunities to hear from the kids on WILL TV. They'll be live and they'll be able to take your calls.
So
the students, right.
That's right. We got to get our lingo down.
That's right. But one of the interviews that they did, the woman said, you know, when I went to school, there was pressure and support from the African-American community to do well in school. If you got a D, you cried. And she said when she graduated high school, she could count on one hand the number of African-Americans who did not graduate, five
from
or fewer,
her class,
from her class.
Yeah.
Well, today, it's the opposite. So the question is, how did we get from there to here?
Yeah, William, what's your sense? I mean, you've lived through this experience.
Sure. I believe that, you know, particularly, I believe that mainstream media, particularly commercial media, has a lot to do and a lot of responsibility to bear in terms of promoting negative media images, and students buy into those images. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're watching watching MTV at 7 o'clock in the morning, you're quick to find that some girl being portrayed that looks like them, with their pants halfway up their butt and dancing with some guy dogging them in a video and thinking that's okay. And then expecting that child to go into a school building and not emulate that behavior.
Yeah.
And nobody's or when they get challenged on it, they don't understand why, because they're not being educated on what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And there's no monitoring, and people are not saying that it's unacceptable for kids to see this, these pornographic images or these adult entertainment images.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so, when students buy into that, and this whole notion that it's cool to be illiterate, that it's cool to
the media reinforces that it's
constantly for profit. Absolutely,
yeah. I mean, I want to. There's a lot of other stuff we want to talk about.
Sure.
Let's just stop right there. This show's called Media Matters.
Sure.
What can we do about that? I mean, what options do citizens have? Parents have. Students have. How do you combat those images so they don't destroy students' lives?
You get them involved in programs like the Brown Project that we're doing, programs like All Girls Radio, turning community members on to independent media system, getting them engaged in public radio, radio stations like WFT, where you can, when those negative things are out there, you can produce and counter that with positive and more accurate information. That's critical.
And you've been working with, I'm sorry to interrupt, but as I recall, before the show, we're talking about, you've been working with, you're teaching a class now, in fact.
Yeah.
On hip-hop artists who are, like, trying to do positive social change.
Sure.
I mean, talk a little bit about that and what role that might play in this.
Well, I'm teaching a course this semester called KRS-1, Hip Hop Artistry and Social Activism. And KRS-1, and it stands for Knowledge Reigns Supreme Over Nearly Everyone. He's an artist who considers himself a teacher in hip hop culture. And too often what you see in hip hop is negative things and a negative, portrayal of what the culture really is. And so you have to educate students on what the reality and what the real is in terms of hip hop culture. And it's really about the spirit of self-determination that when social policy goes bad, youth will succeed despite. Mm-hmm. They will represent despite. And they'll do that in a variety of ways. And it just so happened within hip hop. It came through dance. It came through, graffiti writing and art. It came through, DJing. It came through spoken word, a number of different elements to say that I am here in society, you must see me, and here's how you're going to see me. And so in the 80s, when gun violence was very heavy, KRS-One was one of the artists, along with Public Enemy and a few others, that were actually addressing the issue of black-on-black crime. And what they did was made a record called Self-Destruction and Stop the Violence and a couple others. And they actually raised about $4 million for the National Urban League. And as I talked to KRS-One, he said, well, you know, the real story is we didn't raise the money for the National Urban League. We raised the money and we were too young to understand what to do with it. So we gave the money to the National mm-hmm. Urban League, mm-hmm. Because they had an organized, affiliate network to really do something and have some programs in place. And so today, KRS-One is in his 30s.
Getting old.
It's getting older. Hip hop is growing up. I mean, people have children and have positions, and that needs to be studied in terms of, you know, why did he choose to be that type of artist when it could have been much more profitable for him to denigrate his mother, his sister, because that's what record companies were promoting, mm-hmm. and that's the image they put out there now. He chose a different route. Right now, there's a lot of courses on Tupac Shakur mm-hmm. and his life and his antics. Well, he's only one story. There's some other folks that do some amazing work.
By the term antics, I assume you're not president of the local fan club.
Tupac?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I love Tupac.
Oh,
I think Tupac's awesome.
Okay.
But there's more artists than Tupac.
I see.
You know, and so we really need to study other artists who are still living also that have done, that have provided great social support.
Who are the artists today that, you know, you really point to as, you know, people who are seizing the privileges they have and the platform they have to do progressive, positive.
To be progressive. Michael Franti probably is from a conscious style hip hop artist. He's a hip hop artist with musical capabilities in terms mm-hmm. of instrumentation. I think he gets monitored by the federal government because of things that he says. I mean, he's anti-war. I mean, he's a number of different things, and he, you know, has people thinking. And that's what you want. You want people to think about different things.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as we fall back into commercial radio doesn't support a Michael Franti.
He's not getting a lot of airplay.
Can
you hear him on Champagne Radio if your life depended on it?
Oh, no, you can hear him on WFT or something.
Well, I've been
Oh, no, never. But you'll hear Nelly, and I have nothing against Nelly or anyone mm-hmm. like that. But that's what the mainstream media is promoting. They're mm-hmm. promoting materialism, gaudyism, just a number of things that really have no social value to it. You know, it's very self-centered. And so we have students and we have community folks and a group of young folks who are very self-centered. And as opposed to, you have to change the culture of learning by getting them to think about shared suffrage. And mm-hmm. I think back in the 50s, that's what you saw in terms of the community and what expected, because kids weren't getting educated well. You had shared suffrage. And so you had a community saying that, hey, we have to get something better than this. If we get this opportunity, we're going to make this happen, but you're not going to go in that school and act up. You're going to get your education and you're going to uplift your community. You're going to do this, that, and the other, because you must continue to be prepared to carry on the struggle.
There's more social consciousness in the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the question is being asked now, how do you raise that consciousness again? How do you get those images out there? So with many of the programs, and I do like the Brown project on All Girls Radio or the Beats program. Mm-hmm. We'll look at, if you're talking about representing hip hop culture, I'm going to always say, okay, what's the real in terms of what you have to say and what you're really about and what you're concerned about? And so they'll start telling you. Then you help them by preparing them with media tools to get their message out the best way that they can. Mm-hmm. And then that starts popularizing and changing the culture of learning, and they start believing in something different than what they're seeing.
Kimberly Cronick, joining us, our other guest today in Media Matters, along with Dr. William Patterson, who you just heard. If we get students in the community doing shows like this, not only the one that you two are working on that will be on WILL in May, but just in general, get the young people producing media, not simply consuming MTV and whatever they see in the air. Are there venues locally so it can be shown and consumed? Because it's a great thing to produce something no one ever sees or hears. I mean, right. That's the concern traditionally. You know, how do you get on cable TV if, you know, there's no channels? If you do something, all you're going to get is what's out there. Do you think that if you get kids or students, young people making stuff, or anybody who's outside of the commercial system, there's a place for their stuff to get heard or seen in Champaign-Urbana?
Well, we are fortunate that we do have at least three outlets, because WBCP, they are a commercial station, but they do a lot of public service stuff. We worked with them before.
Who owns that station?
That is owned by J.W. Pirtle, Lonnie Moore.
Clark,
right. And I think someone else you mentioned. Yeah.
Locally owned?
Yeah.
Right,
locally owned.
Best locally owned radio station in the country.
Sure. Yeah, and Mr. Pirtle's a council person in Champaign. Mm-hmm. So they do public service media. They've had local public talk shows hosted by NAACP, hosted by other African Americans in the community. And they worked with us on a dental access campaign recently. So we've worked with them. So, yes, the other side of the coin is you've got production, you've got distribution. Yeah. And, yes, distribution, getting students' voices on commercial radio is virtually impossible unless it's very narrow-casted, as Will was saying, very specific kinds. So at least we have WILL, WBCP, WEFT, that are opportunities to showcase what they're producing, as well as Urbana Public Television. Our stations don't have the same number of viewers and listeners as others, but we do fairly well. And at least there's that. But addressing the other side, the distribution, in fact, since the public owns the airways, I'm not sure why we couldn't insist that some part of the commercial spectrum feature this kind of work. It's just there's not the leadership there to create that. There is the possibility of it, but right now I don't see the leadership to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, William, talk a little bit. We got off in the media, mm-hmm. which is natural on the show, but you were going into sort of the change in the community. I think you're really, it refers nationally, but certainly specifically to Champaign, Urbana, from the 50s to the present day. And a lot of the theme of the project you're working on with the girls concerns desegregation and how that has affected the community. I mean, has it been a blessing? I mean, generally speaking, it's considered a great victory, the Brown decision, because it overturned one of the darkest moments, aspects of the American history. That finally, you know, as you put it, 90-some years after the Civil War was over, finally the legacy of slavery was legally overturned. Is it a euphoric victory? I mean, what are your findings? What's your analysis?
Well, on a local level, I can say that I'm 38, that I haven't seen my community grow, and meaning the Black community, grow in the past 30 years. You know, there hasn't been new housing development. I mean, I think we just start seeing some new housing developments like the Eads Project. Before that, it was 15 or 20 years, and that was the Martin Luther King subdivision. And so when we start talking about community planning, there's tons of growth in Champaign-Urbana and Champaign County. It's phenomenal to see all the growth that's going on. Mm-hmm. African-American community is not growing. And so it's at a standstill in terms of being in a millennium-based society and your community is not connected. That's a very scary situation to be in, and it's something that I'm totally concerned about.
And how does that link up to the desegregation issue?
Because if kids don't believe in education, then they're not prepared to have the tools to compete, to know how to go online and get a job, to be able to work from their home, all of the opportunities that a millennium society offers, they're not getting access to because they're not believing in the educational system. And so No Child Left Behind, the education law that's currently on the books, is really a very interesting policy because it's a very systematic approach to trying to change culture when kids don't believe in an educational process. My argument is that no one's talking about the culture of learning from a student standpoint, and that I don't care if you put testing on there. I don't care if you put more teacher prep on there. If students don't believe in your system, they're not going to support it, which means test scores are not going to go up.
And that's the real crisis we're facing.
That's the real crisis. And so we have what I call a culture of disbelief in the educational process. Mm-hmm. Here, because they see that it doesn't make a difference if you get educated or not. My community hasn't changed. There's not more businesses. Folks in my community are still complaining about no jobs. And so why should I participate in this school if the outcome of it is it's not going to make a difference anyway?
It's irrational then to beat your head against the wall if nothing at the other side of the wall.
Absolutely.
Kimberly Chronic, you're new to the area, relatively new. You've been here five, six years. I assume you've learned a lot in this process. I mean, what have you learned about Urbana-Champaign from working on this project?
Well, I didn't realize that it took to 1966 to desegregate the schools. I hardly knew any African Americans who are older than myself. Of course, I'm learning a lot because I'm here listening as the students conduct the interviews. And, you know, I'm learning about this achievement gap, the high percentages of African Americans in special ed classes, the small percentages in honors classes, the number of disciplinary actions taken against African Americans. And along with the students, I'm struggling, why is this the case?
And these are fairly striking figures, I take it.
Oh my gosh, it's huge. I mean, it's like.
And much worse than from your. At least anecdotally, if not statistically, from 40, 50 years ago, is the sense you're getting?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the numbers are there. The Peterkin report, the court mandated change in the school system. I mean, for example, at Franklin Middle School, I think there's 4 African Americans in the honors program, and they're in one of the classes, and there's 30 kids. And we have two of those girls that are in three of them are in our all girls Brown Project. But you wonder, well, what causes this? And some of the students have interviewed folks who said, look, it's the teachers that aren't connecting with the students and having high expectations of them. Some of the students are saying, no, it's the peer pressure. The African Americans say to each other, you know, you're trying to be white if you do well. So there's multiple factors. There's the housing, the discrimination in housing, which led to why people went to the schools they went to. And then when the busing started, they were taking African American kids from the African American neighbors and busing them south to the white neighborhoods so that split them off from their community. And that's how desegregation was thought of. And why is it that it was thought of that way? I mean, these are all the things that we are grappling in, and I'm grappling with, along with the students, as I listen to the interviews with African Americans from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and now the students themselves.
How about you, William? You know the area, but what have you learned from this process that you didn't know or you only knew partially prior to getting involved with this? And I guess this is a continuation since you've been working on All Girls Radio, but dealing with these kids dealing with the students all the time, the young people, what are you learning from them? What are they teaching you?
Primarily that they have a desire and eagerness to learn, and they don't mind. I think one of the things that we're finding out now, Kim and I, and the rest of the crew, is that there's a lot of work that's still left to be done, and there's a lot of unanswered questions that are going to come out of this project. And these students are eager to do it, and they're not complaining. But I think there is a culture that, well, we don't want to put too much on them. Well, my belief is that you put a lot on them because the society puts a ton on them, and, mm-hmm. and there are no alternatives for black students outside of jail, streets, drugs, unemployment, death. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. And so I don't make any bones about that I expect tons of hard work and just high levels of achievement and expectations because they perform. And the standard, and that's what raising the standards are, is not slacking off because you think a student can't handle it or they're not capable of. Students rise to the occasion every mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. You know, perseverance and self-determinations are the foundation of the hip-hop generations, and they are children of the hip-hop generations, and I always push that. And when I say that, I mean the children of the post-civil rights era, folks that were born out of the policies of the civil rights movement. And so it's knowing that these students have the spirit and desire to learn. You just have to find different ways to engage them in things and in tools that they know and within their own culture. Mm-hmm. And then they'll perform and do the things they need to do.
I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters. You've just been listening to Dr. William Patterson from the University of Illinois, who's actively involved with All Girls Radio and a lot of other radio projects, including one on Brown versus Board of Education that he's working with our other guest, Kimberly Cronick, that will air here on WILL in May. Stay tuned. We'll keep you posted on it. I should also add at this point, we have a few minutes left in the show, that if you want to get our weekly email update, which gives information on the guests who are on the show, links to their work, once a week we'll send you out an email telling you who's coming in the coming weeks, who's been there. You can do so by simply emailing our producer, Victor Picard, and his email address is vpicard, P-I-C-K-A-R-D, at uiuc.edu. We'll send you one email a week. We promise it won't go to any commercial people. You won't be getting pop-ups, nothing like that. And you can get off anytime you want. We have several hundred people who do it, and I think they enjoy it. I get them. I like them. So I'd urge you to do that. Sign up for our weekly email update, vpicard@uiuc.edu. Oftentimes, as in this week, we change shows sort of keep up with events at the last second. Sometimes not to keep up with events, because to keep up with guests who finked out on us, so we've got to change shows. And we'll send you out an email to let you know ahead of time, so you can stay on top of that way, too. So I'd urge you all to do that. Will Patterson, you know, you are a resident of this community. WILL has been here most of your life. As you listen to public radio, do you think, or public television for that matter, both of them, do you think they have much to offer the African-American community in Champaign-Urbana?
Sure. And I think when you start seeing shows like Black Perspectives, when you start having projects like the Brown Project that we're working on, we now produce All Girls Radio here at WILL. And so you're talking about collaborations and partnerships and folks having access to media tools and outlets and distribution centers. So absolutely. And my thing is you always look at the policies of public venues or community-based venues and making certain that that outreach is there. Mm-hmm. And Kim has been great in that area. And so the outcomes of the project are going to be phenomenal in terms of, the Leave Behind that's offering something to archives, that's also providing students with a skill, career options, a number of things that are awareness related where maybe may not have gotten that opportunity before. So there's a great value, to collaboration work, and to organizations like WILL, mm-hmm. Providing that space.
Yeah, Kimberly Cronick, let me ask you, what media do you use to stay, what's your media diet look like? How do you stay on top of the world and the community?
Well, I try to read the local newspaper, of course.
You do?
Well, sometimes I have to take a break because the world is overwhelming and depressing a lot, and there's a lot of policies that I don't agree with. But I read it because it's local, and I read the letters to the editor. Of course, I listen to AM 580, especially our local programs, our talk programs, including this one. Mm-hmm. Listen to WEFT. I sometimes watch the TV news. I'm on the internet a lot as well, so I try to consume, you know, as much as I can within limits because I can get overwhelmed.
Yeah, there's only so many hours in a day.
Right, and the thing is, what makes local radio great is the localism. And this project, I just want to add one thing to what Will said.
Sure, please do.
I mean, we're very fortunate Will came to us, because our connections with the African-American community just got way deeper because of that. And I think when you have a station that, does good work and strives to do better, but is mostly a white organization, that's what you find in this area. Mm-hmm. How do you make those connections, those collaborations? Someone has to cross the divide and make the connection, and then it has to have a real effect on the community you're trying to work with. And if it doesn't, it's not going to have any long-term roots. And I think what we're starting to build with All Girls Radio and this program are roots with and between and among the African-American community. We started that, I think, with Black Perspectives, a TV show. But I'm thinking that this is really going to propel us into collaborations that I want us to continue doing this.
I have to say that I deal a lot with public radio and public television in my work. And, I think this is an unusual station. I'm just saying because I have a show on it. But I don't think you would find, if I'd asked you that question, in many communities I would have gotten that response. I think this is unfortunately the anomaly, the exception. I wish it was the rule, but it's not the case. And I'm not just saying that because I have a show on the station. As people know, I'd trash the station if they deserved it. And NPR has come in for its fair share of hits on Media Matters. What about you, Will? What do you read, consume to sort of stay on top of the world? And what do you – suggest to your students that they read, consume, to get away from the sort of vulgar stuff that is sort of, you know, glorifies sort of antisocial behavior?
Much like Kim, you know, you have to be informed on local issues. And so, you know, your local rags or outlets that provide some information. But, you know, being a researcher, you got to triangulate your information, go to a variety of different sources, utilize the web. But go pick, if you got questions about something, pick up the phone and call people. You know, that's my greatest source. You know, I want to find out the real. I'm going to call you up. I don't care where you are.
Let me see. You want to know what's happening with the war in Iraq. Where would you look to get a trustworthy account on that?
Wow, that's interesting. I don't know, since I'm not there to see it for myself. I really don't believe anything that anybody says, you know. And I mean, and that's how I feel about the war. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we get fed a lot of images, and we don't know what's accurate and what's not, you know. And so again, the researcher side of me, if I haven't looked at it myself, it's kind of something I learned at WMIQ. They said, if you don't report what you think you know, report what you know. And so I really don't know what's going on over there. And so.
But do you have any media you'd be comfortable like this? I got a better chance of getting something reliable here than there.
Well, I think you have to look at a variety of different sources on any issue. And then you make your own judgment from there, you know, but you know, don't stick to just one source. Just get informed.
What about your kids, or students, young people? They come to you and say, what should I, you tell me I shouldn't be watching, these videos, with their images. What do you say? What should I watch? What should I be doing? I want to have fun. I don't want to just, you know, sit around and, you know, read boring books.
Know what you're watching is what I tell them. Know what you're watching and know what you're seeing. It's like you have little kids right now. I have my son and his friends. My wife was just telling me they were running around calling themselves pimps. Now,
how old is your son?
8 years old. And so they really don't know what that is, but they know that, oh gosh, G-Unit, one of the popular rappers right now, his name is escaping me. That's the popular term in hip hop culture right now is pimping and 50 Cent is the artist. And so they use that a lot, and because he's a popular, and again, mainstream media is pumping that, then they're grabbing that, but they really don't know what a pimp is. Now I'm going to sit him and his friends down and explain to him what that means. Then I say, okay, now make a decision if you still want to suggest that you're that. You know, and so informing him of what he's choosing is going to make him make a difference. Now he can choose it again if he wants to, but know what you're choosing.
Yeah.
So when, you know, when there's heat for that, you know why.
Yeah, you know, you're doing, we've only got a minute or so left, Will, but your work has been with All Girls Radio. This project is going to be a bunch of middle school girls working together on this documentary. You just mentioned your son, your boys. Is there plans for all boys radio?
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion. There's a component called B-Boy Radio that's very similar. That's a program that's on the shelf. But one of the projects that I'm working on right now, I'll be presenting at the Education Incarceration Conference next week on with a presentation titled No Child Left Behind from a Hip Hop Perspective, and I'll be showing a film, a re-edited version of music videos, and showing how these images dictate popular youth culture and how it then destroys youth. And so again, using off-the-shelf media tools to produce, to reproduce, or remix what they're really seeing. And so I encourage folks to come out and check that out. It'll be next Friday.
Next Friday, the 23rd. Okay. Yes. You know, on that note, I hear the band tuning up, which means it's time for us to clear out of the studio. I want to thank you, William Patterson, for being our guest today on Media Matters. Kimberly Cronick, I've been wanting to have you on for a long time. I'm delighted we finally able to.
Thank you.
And we'll be in touch on this and let our listeners know about the documentary in May. And thank you all for listening. Be back 1 week from today with Paul Krugman.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Prairie Ensemble, which performs a concert called Funny Business at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, January 24th at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. Featuring a variety of musical humor, the ensemble welcomes guest soloists and the Bach Chorus in PDQ Bach's Oratorio, The Seasonings. Tickets and information available at 355-9077 or on the web at prairieensemble.org.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, a chance of flurries early, then becoming mostly sunny. The high in the mid-20s with the temperature falling through the teens in the afternoon. Northwest winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear and cooler with a low around 2 degrees and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. The wind chill 4 below to 14 below zero. Tomorrow, partly sunny with the high around 19 degrees and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. The wind chill 8 below to 18 below zero. This is WILL Urbana.